2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Hey, everybody. JJ Cooper, Jeff Ponce here. Baseball America World Series wrap-up podcast. The World Series are over. We can't not talk about that. I think we'd be wrong if we didn't. Congratulations to the Dodgers. And also, I know that it's not something that anyone's probably feeling this way as a Yankees fan today, but congratulations to the Yankees. There is no, even for the Yankees, there's no such thing as a bad season where you went to the World Series. It's hard to get there. Obviously, Yankees fans know that right now. This is the first trip in many a year. But we want to dive in, talk a little bit about what happened in Game 5, but more importantly, what we'll do in today's podcast is kind of how the Dodgers did this, how the Yankees did this, and where they're going from here, because that's one of the things that we love talking about at Baseball America, you know, the future. And the future for baseball and what this World Series also means for it. We'll hit all those, but Jeff, to start off, we are still kind of, we had a fun Slack conversation going on. We were on social last night talking about it, but what a wild clinching deciding game. If you pull away a year or two from now, what's the play that you think you're going to remember from the decider of game five?
It's kind of unfortunate because he pitched a tremendous game. But I think the lasting memory, and I think probably this is the case, I'm not a Yankees fan, but I'm saying for a majority of Yankees fans, it's probably that Gerrit Cole play at first base where he doesn't cover the bag. You know, and it was just it was a nightmare inning for the Yankees there, you know, in the fifth. You know, of course that that gets the Dodgers on the board for the first time. And the hits sort of keep on coming in that inning. When you follow with Freddie Freeman, you know, with a line drive single for, you know, for an RBI that scored a couple of runs. And then Teoscar Hernandez follows and, you know, a few batters later and hits a double that scores Mookie. So game's tied 5-5. I think that play, just because Cole was cruising at that point. You know, really low pitch count. He was pitching so well that the first couple innings of the game, and then he finally walked a batter in maybe the third or the fourth. And I kind of looked at my wife and I was like, I guess there's no perfect game tonight. Like, it seemed like he was pitching that well, that he was just dominating. The fastball was increasing in velocity as he was getting deeper into the start. He just really had it going. And it's unfortunate that, you know, his own fielding mistake, you know, led to a run, and then that inning kind of coming unraveled.
I got to kind of agree with you on that. And I would say the big thing about it, obviously, that was an inning that's one of, I think, one of the worst half innings of defense you'll ever see, especially in a World Series game. But the thing with the other errors, Aaron Judge did not catch a fly ball in center field, an easy to catch fly ball. Anthony Volpe throws offline on a throw to third base, second error. And then ball hit to Rizzo. Cole doesn't cover. Rizzo doesn't sprint to the bag. They both kind of stare at each other instead. Betts reaches, sets it all up. The thing with all three of those, though, the thing I'll say is there's nothing to be said. There's nothing that Aaron Judge, you could say, well, Aaron Judge next time catch the ball, but there's not that's a physical error, right? Like, that is he didn't catch the ball, but there's not a decision being made there in any way. Volpe's throw, he could have had better footwork, all that. But again, it's a physical error, the kind that happens. The play at first, which would have gotten them out of the inning, is more, and it was a tougher play than I would say that, you know, that I both sure. Rizzo and Cole talked about this, that it was a tough play. The ball was spun coming off the bat, tough play. And it is Mookie Betts who can run, all that. Mm-hmm. I do think there's a chance that Cole covers there and Betts beats him to the bag, because as Cole said, he took a route. He took an angle, like trying to field the ball, realized then he couldn't field it. But the best way I can put it for that is no one's talking about this play right now in any way, shape, or form. If Cole takes a bad angle off the mound, adjusts, sprints as fast as he can to first base, Rizzo feeds him, and Betts beats him to the bag, then we go, hey, Great play by a great player. Mookie Betts beat him to the bag. You know, it was 4-1 to the first or whatever, really ran, whatever it is. And we go, okay, that's the breaks. But when you have the first baseman and pitcher kind of staring at each other in a situation like that, and it is sad because the player who probably had the best game for the Yankees was Gerrit Cole. Gerrit Cole went deeper than pretty much pitch-wise, I think, than anyone went in the postseason. Like, we had kind of a more of an old-school starting pitcher start there, a front-of-the-rotation starter start, where he, you know, he started to see the lineup, the Dodgers lineup, for a fourth time, which basically never happens these days.
Yeah.
It did. And even when he left the game, it did put them in a good position. They weren't going to have to rely on the bullpen very much, but enough for it to matter. and that's kind of a perfect segue to kind of get into the Dodgers here. Freddie Freeman, I feel like that was the easiest World Series MVP decision we've had in a very long time.
Yeah.
But what does also kind of stand out to me about that is the Dodgers have stars, and their stars came to play.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what I'm left thinking this morning, just regarding this series and, you know, where the Yankees shortcomings were. Cause I think many people came into this series kind of viewing the starting pitching as an advantage for the Yankees. You know, to their credit, the Dodgers just pitched really well. There were starters. Flaherty obviously didn't have a great game last night, but, you know, starters or relievers, guys stepped up, gave them big outings, particularly Walker Buehler in this series. But when we look back on this in 5, 10, 15, 20 years, we're going to look at the top of this Dodgers order. I know that Ohtani didn't do a whole lot in the World Series. I think some of that was probably
an excuse.
Yeah, I think some of that was probably injury related. He did have a shoulder injury in the middle of game
swinging with one arm.
Yeah, when he was removed, etc. And the other arm was one that he had elbow surgery on as well. So I think it's kind of important to put all that into perspective. But behind that, you have Mookie Betts. You have Freddie Freeman, who had an all-time World Series run here. Teoscar Hernandez. I think, you know, the numbers-wise, maybe Max Muncy doesn't jump off the page, puts together really good at-bats consistently. He's going to grow.
He was 0 for – I mean, I will say that some of those were not so good. When he went, like, 0 for 15 at one point?
Sure. But prior to that, obviously, in that ALCS – I mean, the NLCS, and earlier he had that long on-base streak. But I still think, like, you're not going to see 3-4 pitch at-bats very often against Muncy. And, you know, Tommy Edman had a great series too. I think if, you know, Freeman is obviously the unanimous MVP, number two is probably Edman. Had some huge hits in the series, or some big plays. I know he wasn't great in the field, but, you know, in terms of what you're asking Tommy Edman to do, I think did pretty well. And it's just overall, the lineup is pretty good. Even if, you know, you're looking at a couple of guys at the bottom of the lineup who really didn't produce, and a guy like Will Smith or Gavin Lux, they can have their moments. And I think it's just that 1 through 5 is just so strong.
I would say if you're having a third, you know, if you had to vote for three candidates for MVP, I probably would have written Walker Buehler at number three on that list.
Sure.
Because obviously, as you mentioned, a great postseason, a great World Series, I should say, not a great postseason. His NLDS start was one that he would rather have back, but to gut through, like, Walker Buehler is not, he got more and more back to being the Walker Buehler that we remember seeing, but he's still not 100% the Walker Buehler of the fire breathing dragon he was pre-injury. But if this is it for what, you know, like, if this is or near the end of Walker Buehler's time in, you know, whether they tender him a qualifying offer or not, he goes down in Dodgers history. Like,
yeah,
this is his third World Series starting for the Dodgers. In 18, as a 23-year-old, he throws 7 scoreless, 2 hits in his one start. In 20, when they win it, he allows 1 run, strikes out 10 in 6 innings as they beat the Rays. And then he goes out and throws, you know, shutout 5, and then comes back to finish it off in the clinching game. It's a 0.47 ERA in over 3 World Series for the Dodgers. and a guy who obviously has been really good for them in the regular season as well. Like the Dodgers, that's what to me kind of stood out here when it was all said and done. These are two big market teams, two teams that can do things that a lot of teams can't do. We'll acknowledge the disparity that there is there, as I've been saying on much discussions we've had on the staff and all. Like, the Dodgers make $320 million a year in local TV revenue. That does open up options that other teams don't have. We talked about Teoscar Hernandez, 1 year, $23 million. That's a big deal for a lot of teams. For the Dodgers, that's their fourth move of the offseason. And Teoscar Hernandez is going there for 1 year, $23 million. I'm pretty sure that he's not going to take your random AL or NL Central team for 1 year's 23, right? That's going to the Dodgers for the chance to get a ring and a nice contract to leapfrog him to his next contract. All those things. But the thing that really did stand out for the stars that the Dodgers had, I just felt like that their lineup and their pitching staff, again, to their credit, like they came through in the World Series, but their lineup is just deeper. You talked about the at-bats. It really did feel like with the Dodgers, you kind of didn't know if Freddie Freeman was coming up at the inning, you knew it was probably going to be really good in the World Series. But they had a little bit more of, okay, wherever they are in the lineup, if Kike Hernandez is at the plate, if Tommy Edman's at the plate, okay, let's see what happens this inning. Whereas with the Yankees, it really did feel like it was like, if you could get through the top of the Yankees lineup, Volpe had his moments, but basically when Stanton on, you know, once you're through Stanton, it's like, okay, let's take a breath. Let's reload and let's get ready so that the next time that Soto's stepping to the plate, we're ready to go. And that was to me, kind of one of the differences here is that you had a team where both teams had stars, but the Dodgers, the shoulder cut players around those stars, I just felt like were better.
Yeah, I think you look at, you know, the bottom of the order, particularly from, you know, an offensive standpoint, they got a little bit more out of those guys. I mean, I think, you know, Kike Hernandez has proven to be a consistently clutch player for this organization over the course of, you know, his career. You know, Edman obviously was really good. And I think, that's kind of the difference. You know, you look at Verdugo, Wells had a big moment, but overall really didn't hit much in these playoffs. Volpe started to come together toward the end. Rizzo, I just sort of felt like at this point, you weren't going to get the big moment out of him. Like, you weren't going to get a ball that was just absolutely nuked. It felt like, you know, an old man like Yuli Gurriel at the end. Like, it kind of felt like, all right, he's not going to give you a bat at bat, but that was sort of a hole in the lineup for me. You know, looking back on it, it's like that's a position they probably could have shored up at the trade deadline, you know, frankly.
No, that's, I think we'll get to that because we want to get to the Yankees and them going forward and all. To start though with the Dodgers, I'm just going to put the ball on the tee for you, Jeff. What is it? Because I do think the key thing here is the Dodgers winning a second World Series, I think, is kind of vital for them from a long-term legacy perspective. I'm not going to go into the 2020. Yes, it was a short season. The World Series still counts. Someone still won it. You know, they won it. Two World Series, I do think, puts this team among dynasties. You know, them and Houston are the dynasties of the, really, of the, you know, of the 2010s and on at this point. Dodgers are there every year. But what is it? Why are the Dodgers, take the fact that they can pay for stars, that's part of it. But there's a level beyond that. What do the Dodgers do so well? Or is the answer kind of, yes, they do everything well?
Yeah. I think you just look at acquisition. There's a few different inputs or, you know, streams of, you know, potential players and talent. And the Dodgers optimize all of those streams as well as anybody. I think if you want to put it succinctly, that's probably the easiest way to put it. Do they make good trades? Yes. Do they have prospects that they develop and acquire, whether that's in the international market or through the draft, that people want to trade good players for? Yes, they do. Can they play the good? Can they play? Can they pay the good players that they acquire? Yeah, they can do that. They can also go out into free agency, and they're probably the most attractive landing spot for a good to great player who hasn't had an opportunity to play in the playoffs or have much success. You're going to go there. You know, it's like it has the same sort of cachet as joining the Patriots with Tom Brady, or joining the Heat or the Cavaliers when LeBron was there. I think there's some of that pull. It's maybe not one, you know, now it kind of is one megastar with Shohei Ohtani, but I think you look at Ohtani, why he ended up there. That's a big part of it. And
they had two MVPs already on the roster when Ohtani signed.
Exactly. And they can go out and they can sign Teoscar Hernandez on a one-year deal with a big, you know, annual number in terms of salary. But I don't think that you necessarily see Teoscar Hernandez sign that deal with the Reds. He's probably not signing that deal, even with the Mets. You know, that's a Dodgers sort of deal. So they can acquire players in this variety of ways. They do really well in terms of player development. I know there's been a lot of injuries and they've taken some slack for that. Conversely, on the other side of that, the other side of the coin with that conversation is they have like 12 different guys available, many of which they developed and do have some level of control over still in terms of contracts and structure, et cetera. So I think, you know, and they made good deadline trades too. I think they just backfilled the roster. They signed the big stars. They trade for the big stars, but they'll go out there and they'll make the Kopech deal. They'll make the deal for Tommy Edman, et cetera. And I think ultimately that's what separates them from every other organization.
What stands out to me, and this is the frightening part, is, as you said, they had so many pitching injuries this year. The pitchers that they had injuries to are the young guys. They're not like, okay, Clayton Kershaw got hurt again. Okay, but at this point, as much as we both love Clayton Kershaw, that's not a, like, what? And no. Tyler Glasnow got hurt, and he's under a long-term contract, and you would say, okay, Tyler Glasnow getting hurt is also, unfortunately, something that happens. Although I would say, like, it's not crazy to think that Tyler Glasnow could be, you know, much better next year and healthy. It's very possible, but down the road, you know, next year. But
yeah.
This team, if all these young arms who got hurt this year, if they have a 20% attrition rate among those and 80% of them get back to close to what they were or what they looked like they were going to be, this team's pitching staff could be really frightening going forward, because in addition to Ohtani, who, by the way, will be back pitching next year, that might be a useful guy to have at the top of a rotation, and Yamamoto and Glasnow. Okay. I mean, right there, if those guys are healthy, that's a top three that compares with pretty much anyone. But let's say if they don't bring back Buehler, Flaherty's a free agent. But now we really get into, okay, is Dustin May or Tony Gonsolin, Gavin Stone, River Ryan, Kyle Hurt, Landon Knack is a number six starter. Who am I leaving out? There's other injuries too.
Emmett Sheehan, but the thing is hurt Ryan Sheehan all had Tommy John surgery. And I believe Stone's going to miss all of 25 with that shoulder surgery. So those four guys will be on the shelf, I believe, for the entirety of the season.
But these are guys who for 25 or 26, what I'm trying to say with this is these are guys who still are part of their long-term plans. And I think kind of are vital for them because, I mean, they have more resources than anyone, but as they kind of get older and maybe tail off a little bit and are so expensive on the lineup side, this kind of allows them to get a little bit less expensive on the pitching side.
And you have Bobby Miller. Yes. Who's still, you know, will be 26 next year. Justin Wroblewski, who's going to be 24, 25 next year. And then depending upon what his health is like, Nick Frasso, 26, he had a rocket coming out of 2023. I mean, the arrow was way up on Frasso. He was a guy that I think was in the back end of our top 100 list, was somebody that, you know, the feedback had been really loud. And then obviously deals with an unfortunate injury. He misses the entire season. That's another guy where, you know, he could potentially factor in with
Jackson Ferris,
et cetera. Ferris will be a little bit closer. Yeah, I mean, you
You've got Edgardo Henriquez to work in the pen.
And they have a variety of like really interesting pitching prospects that in the next 2 years could develop into something too. You know, Eric Swan, I think I was watching some Christian Zuzueta video the other day. Jeremy Rosario, who's in the AFL, had some major stuff, though he's Rule 5 eligible this year. And then whatever Dodgers prospect, pitching prospect pops up in the next 12 months, there's going to be one. Yeah, it's just, it's a really deep organization, really in all facets. And there's just, there's no end in sight. Some catastrophic things would have to happen for them not to be a major contender, if not in the same position playing games this time of year next year. I really think you can look at this lineup. You can look at the rotation, the bullpen, the types of moves that they'll make to backfill throughout the offseason and season where needed. And you just have confidence that, you know, this is an organization that could run it back and potentially win back-to-back World Series championships. They're that good.
When it comes to hiring, don't go searching for the one. Just meet your match with Indeed. If you hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform for over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed at Baseball America is that it makes hiring easy. Everything's in one place. I get my applications. I get notifications when I get new applications. I get to contact prospective candidates all on Indeed. I can move people to the next level all on Indeed. And we can keep all of everyone on staff involved in the hiring process up to date, all at Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Hey, everyone. It's JJ Cooper. We'll get back to the show in a minute. But first, I want to take a moment to talk about the recent hurricanes and share how you can help those affected by these storms. T-Mobile is rallying for hurricane relief and making it easy for you to help, too. Hurricanes have had a huge impact in the Mid-Atlantic and Southeast this year, and recovery efforts will be underway for a while. This is where T-Mobile comes in. T-Mobile believes in going beyond for those affected by hurricanes and are once again going to bat for those communities that have been impacted. That's why they're partnering with the American Red Cross and Major League Baseball to rally for hurricane relief to help those who need it most. This World Series, T-Mobile is donating $25,000 to hurricane relief efforts for every home run hit. And here's what you can do to help. If you text RALLY, R-A-L-L-Y, to 90999 right now, T-Mobile will also donate another $10. That's right, you text and T-Mobile donates for you. So join T-Mobile this World Series in supporting those affected by recent hurricanes. Text RALLY to 90999 and check out T-Mobile.com/MLB to learn more about their hurricane relief efforts. Maximum $1 million total contribution. Text before end of postseason. American Red Cross name and logo used with its consent. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. I'm with the Yankees. Again, credit for them getting here. I do think we also saw the World Series exposed the Yankees' limits, the weaknesses in many ways. Like Aaron Judge, that was a catchable ball, but Aaron Judge should not be your center fielder. No. Ideally, he should be a corner. I would say the biggest indictment, the thing that just blew me away, is there wasn't a bench bat on the roster. There wasn't anyone the ninth inning, you're down by one. You need a big hit. You need someone to get on base. If nothing else, you need someone to get on base to flip it to the top of the lineup. And you know that if you get, if two guys reach, Juan Soto's getting to play. You're getting another at bat. And Juan Soto, with two men on, tying run, you know, one run ties it, sends it to extra, is a dream, right? They didn't have anyone. I mean, it was the bottom of their lineup, and they didn't have anyone on the bench who you'd be like, yeah, okay, Austin Wells is not really mashing. Let's go to the bench. We'll bring in Trevino for the extras if we get there. If we win it here, no big deal. No one to replace him with. Alex Verdugo, who has struggled at the plate for most of the year, as Yankee fans in my feed have mentioned many, many, many times over the 2024 season. There was no one better. Like, Jason Dominguez pinch ran once. That was the only time we saw Jason Dominguez in the World Series. But to go back to what you were talking before, first base was a problem all year. And when Rizzo went down, they didn't say, they did go get Chaz Chisholm, who fixed third base for them, to their credit and Jazz Chisholm's credit, because he had never played third base before. But first base, it was Ben Rice. It was Ben Arroz as the, okay, this is our backup plan. And there was no other plan. And so they kind of were left there. In the outfield, they were really left with, these are our guys and no one else is playing. There wasn't that. When you talk about, again, I don't want to, I'm not a Yankees fan myself, but when you talk about those teams of the 90s and the aughts, and you say what made them so great, obviously you can talk core four and all that. But the other thing is, oh, there's Daryl Strawberry coming off the bench, or there's Wade Boggs,
Jose,
or there's Charlie Hayes, or there's Tim Raines, or there's, you could just go down the list. Yeah. And it was like, you always had guys to step in who weren't being asked to be stars anymore, even if some of the times they were former stars. But the guys that they were trying to do that with on this team, they didn't feel comfortable doing that. Like, obviously, DJ LeMay, who's not even on the, you know, has been hurt and on the postseason roster, but Trent Grisham, you know, I don't want to say that John Birdie's injury hurt them. John Birdie's injury, nothing against John Birdie, should not hurt them, but it hurt them not having John Birdie on your World Series roster, which is a truly weird statement to say, you know? And so, like, that's where I look at it and I'm like, okay, obviously the big question about the entire postseason for the Yankees is they'll have Judge back. They have Stanton back. Will they have Juan Soto back? And, but if they don't, this is a window, like, not that it's closed, but this team, I don't, stars obviously are not what carries you by themselves in baseball ever. However, it is important. And Juan Soto's one of their two difference makers in their lineup. And he's a free agent. Like, yeah, when you look at this Yankees team, we talked about the Dodgers. This Dodgers team is built, like, I could see next year's Dodgers team being better than this year's Dodgers team, especially if Shohei Ohtani returns to being a Cy Young caliber starter in addition to being the DH, then watch out. But what about this Yankees team?
Yeah, I think, you know, the beginning of the conversation has to be Juan Soto. It's certainly not the end of it. I think he's so tailor-made for that park in terms of his swing, where he fits in, the pressure that he takes off of Aaron Judge, kind of takes some pressure off for Giancarlo Stanton, though I think after this playoffs, he's kind of A-rotted himself of being a lightning rod to now being a fan favorite and is going to have murals outside of Yankee Stadium or something, have his picture hung up in Billy's across the street. But yeah, you know, I think that you look at this team and for me, the separator between them and a really tough competitive division, which, oh, by the way, I think we probably both agree on this. I don't think the AL East is going to get any easier next year. The Orioles are 1 year ahead. We'll see what they do, new ownership, etc. That could be an exciting destination for some potential free agents, trades, you know, etc. The Red Sox should be better, and they kind of surprised a little bit. We're a little bit tougher this year than I think people expected. I'd be shocked, even though the ballpark is an issue, I'd be shocked if the Rays fall back any from this year. They could be a better team next year. And the Blue Jays really disappointed. It could be kind of a turning point for them, so we'll see. But they're another team with a lot of veterans that they could come back and just have a good year too. It's a really tough division. Juan Soto allowed them to separate a little bit from those teams, particularly the Orioles, who also struggled down the stretch. I think you need that guy back. If it's the Yankees, the brand, having a guy like that associated with the brand with Aaron Judge, I feel like it's worthwhile for them to just back up the Brinks truck and just give him as much money as they can. The Dodgers, that came out during the World Series. The Dodgers have interest. Of course they do. Why wouldn't they in Soto? That would be really interesting as well. But if I'm the Yankees, I am giving him a blank check and figuring out how do we keep this guy in the team. And I think when you look at some of the ages on this team, 32-year-old Aaron Judge, 35-year-old Giancarlo Stanton, and that's really a big part of your core. You have some younger players like Volpe and Wells, Dominguez, if he, you know, pans out, that could bring you forward. I think that you need Soto to kind of bridge the gap a little bit there as you potentially trade for or find some other stars in free agency over the next couple of years. This is a team that I wouldn't say this is a wagon for next year. I think that their fortunes and how they're viewed and their odds of getting back to the World Series, you know, obviously decrease tremendously. If Juan Soto walks and signs elsewhere, if he returns, I think they kind of come back to where they were. The big question mark for me with this Yankees team, though, is it's an older pitching staff, and the younger guys that you do have on the staff have some injury question marks. And a guy like Clark Schmidt, who was pitching really well prior to his injury, you know, Louis Heel, who's, you know, a couple of years off of Tommy John surgery at this point, throws really hard. Garrett Cole dealt with injuries this year. Carlos Rodon is always going to deal with injuries. And then you have, you know, I don't know if he's signed for next year, but you have a 34-year-old Marcus Stroman.
No, he's still signed for next year.
He is still signed for next year. So it's an older pitching staff. Nestor Cortez was beat up this year. You know, you have to wonder if maybe his 23 was a little bit of catching some lightning in a bottle, had an awful moment in the playoffs. He's dealt with injuries as well. You know, he's on the wrong side of 30 next year. There's a lot of question marks here, I think, in terms of, do we have enough starting pitching? If I am in that front office, that's the question I'm asking myself. Yeah, on paper, this staff looks pretty good. It does. I mean, you have Garrett Cole, you have Carlos Rodon. Schmidt took a big step forward, I think, at the back end when you got a guy like Louis Heel and what he showed, and then trying to figure it out between Stroman and Cortez. Still, that's five or six different injury risks that you have there potentially. You have to have some concerns there. Garrett Cole was excellent in the playoffs. He had to add some innings on, maybe got some rest because he was injured in that first part of the season. He's 34, going to be 35 next year. You have to sort of start to wonder when that's going to break down. Maybe it won't. Maybe he's just that outlier, you know, ace pitcher, future Hall of Famer that's just going to keep on rolling. I think it's possible, but you do have to sort of wonder about the health with this starting pitching staff. And if I'm the Yankees, I'm going out and trying to acquire another, you know, one or two type of starter to backfill a little bit and make me feel a little bit better about all that. Cause it can pay Stroman and Cortez and guys like that to be long men or be the sixth man in the rotation. They can figure that out, I think.
One other thing before we move on from this, the other thing that I come away from this after watching the World Series is, I really feel like the National League was significantly better than the American League this year. Like, if you ask me, like, the Padres, I feel like I know it's a 5-game series, but the Padres gave the Dodgers a bigger scare than the Yankees. I feel like that was a back and forth series where either of these teams could win it. And I think if it went 7, it still would have been a back and forth series where either team can win it. Now it's a 7-game series. It's a 5-game in this case. Don't want to make it sound, but I do think, like, when you look at it, the Padres had every bit as many stars as we're talking about here. I felt like, you know, they had a better bullpen. They had everything like that. I feel like the Phillies, like if the Phillies had played this Yankee, like, it does just jump out to me that maybe this was a really good year for the National League. That being said,
yeah,
I will be really, as someone who cares about baseball as a whole and is not really rooting for any of these teams, if the Dodgers sign Juan Soto, that's bad for baseball in my mind. If the World Series champs, who already have Shohei Ohtani and Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman and Yamamoto and Glasnow, are then like, you know what we're missing? The best on base pure hitter in baseball. Yeah, we need to add that to our collection. That's like basically this giant flashing red light of like, yeah, there's one team that's operating at just a different world than everyone else. And that would kind of frighten me if that happened, to be honest. I mean, like, what do you think?
I think it's almost reminiscent of, I mean, they lost the previous year, but the year before that, they had won the NBA Finals. But like the Golden State Warriors in 2017, adding
Kevin Durant.
You know, it feels like that. Like, you know, obviously one player makes up a much larger portion of or percentage of your roster in basketball than it does in baseball. So I know it's not one for one, but yeah, I think that's sort of what it would be like, is like Juan Soto going to the Dodgers. You know, I still feel like if you're the Yankees, unless Soto wants to go to LA, that he was sitting there in the dugout and was so angry losing to the Dodgers that, you know, if you can't beat him, join him, his mentality. I can't imagine the Yankees don't go, whatever they offer, we'll offer, you know, 5 million more. Like, we'll give you ownership, we'll give you, you know, your own Juan Soto Yankee shop in Tokyo. We don't care, whatever you want.
We'll let you put your name on the back of the jersey if you want.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you can have a beard and a mohawk and dye your hair green with nose ring. You could look like Dennis Rodman if you'd like to. I can't envision the Yankees letting this guy walk. Now, these are famous last words. This is probably going to be freezing cold takes. I just can't imagine the point that they've gotten to. It's a money-making machine. I think the one thing that this market and the fan base has been clamoring for a while is a winner, because there's a lot of good New York teams. There haven't been any real championships among the four major sports in a while.
There are a lot of good New York teams.
Well, the Knicks are pretty good, and the Rangers aren't a bad team.
When's the last time the Knicks won anything?
1972. But
okay,
but I'm still old. The Knicks are. I'm not saying any trash about the Knicks. I'm a Celtics fan. They could scare me by the end of the year. It's a good team, is all I'm saying. You know.
So I know you're not looping the Jets and Giants into that either.
Well, they thought the Jets were going to be good this year, but.
I'm going to say the New York teams. I mean, like, this was good. Like, and again, the Mets should be better and better too. Like, I'm not harshing on New York, but this has not been the 21st century so far. Has not been, you know, where they're still cleaning up the you know, hey, the Liberty. You know, now we do have a champion in New York, but you're not having to still be sweeping up the trash from the last ticker tape parade. Like, oh no, there's just too many of these happening here, you know? But that leads into my last point that I wanted us to touch on too, which is, I do think, I mean, obviously if you're an executive for MLB or Fox, your dream almost happened last night, which is if the Dodgers come back in that game, but then the Yankees come back again. You didn't want 5-0 and then the Dodgers just kind of throw it in and okay, we're going back to LA.
Yeah. But
once that game became 5-5 and then the Yankees take the lead, and then, you know, if the Yankees had pulled that game out in a tight game, send it back to LA for game 6, even if you didn't get a game 7, that is a day for everyone's locked in on this. The casual fans are clearly more interested in this World Series than they've been in many a year. We don't know what the number will be on game 5. It'll probably be the biggest ratings number of the series. The series was already averaging 15 million viewers for the series, which in 2024 if you're not talking about football, that is a truly massive number. I can only find 4 shows/events, I think it is, in the U.S. in 23 that drew 15 million viewers. State of the Union Address, which is on all the channels pretty much.
Yeah.
Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, Academy Awards, and then the Next Level Chef season premiere. And you're like, what? Which aired right after the Super Bowl.
You know? Oh,
so
okay.
This year, Tracker aired right after the Super Bowl. Tracker will be one of the channel. Tracker will be the only scripted show to draw 15 million fans and 15 million viewers in it. But you're gonna see multiple, and when I say that, I'm talking about the top 100 shows of last year, the other 96 were football games. So the World Series, these are truly massive numbers already before we get the number for what will probably be the biggest number. It is the largest ratings for World Series since probably 2016, depending on this number, 2017 at the worst, which is a big deal. This will be the third time in the last 5 years that the World Series has drawn more viewers than the NBA Finals. And I bring that up and people go, why do you compare it to the NBA? Because every time I say that to someone, they're like, no, the NBA gets way more ratings than baseball. And it's like, no, it doesn't. They're actually kind of similar, even though there's a perception out there, I understand, that the NBA is, you know, again, they're different sports and all that. But there is a perception that, oh, the NBA gets way better ratings than world MLB. MLB is a, quote, dying sport, blah, 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 you know, all that. And I say that just to point out, like, no, this will be a really important World Series for baseball, because even though it didn't get the dream scenario, it didn't get to maximize this viewership at the level that if this had gone 7 games, game 7 would have been truly massive from a interest and ratings perspective. But even with a 5-game series, it is a useful thing for baseball to show that, hey, a lot of the issues that baseball has had, there are still issues. We just talked about Juan Soto maybe signing with the Dodgers. And, you know, there may be a few revenue imbalances in this sport where the Teoscar Hernandez contract for the Dodgers is one that many MLB teams would be like, I don't know if we can do that 1 year, 23. And the Dodgers are like, can we add, you know, a 11th star to this team? There are some issues. But all that being said, I do think that this was, and we've talked about this, was vital for baseball, because baseball is an improved product now over what it was a few years ago. If you are a casual fan, many of your complaints about baseball have kind of been all answered. Like, I know that there still are a few people listening to this who are like, I hate pitch clocks. I will say, if you watch the World Series and you're a casual fan, I don't even know if you knew that the pitch clock existed. Like, it was not something that was it. As you and I, who've watched a lot of minor league games with pitch clocks before, had predicted, it has faded into the background. But what it has done is that there are pitchers who before, it's like, hey, if you give me all the time in the world, I'm going to take it. It did play a role, I think, and they mentioned on the broadcast in last night's game. I still am baffled by how no one ever like went, okay, you know what? I'm going to go out and visit with Garrett Cole just to take a break here, just to like pause in this 5-run nightmare of an inning. And that, you know, like that was weird how it just kept rolling along and just kept going. But I do think that this is going to be a very important World Series for baseball when we talk about interest. Again, when I talk about TV ratings, some people may say, why do you care? Like, you're not making any money on that. And I follow. But when you talk about how the U.S., how fans perceive these sports, this was an important perception World Series, I feel like, for baseball. And I feel like one that will have benefits for years to come. Now, if the Yankees play the Dodgers every year in the World Series, that is a terrible idea. And that would...
Hey, those are the good old days in the 50s. That's what was happening, you know?
Right. And everyone talks about the good old days of baseball, it's like, it was good if you lived in New York. If you lived anywhere else, the good old days were, oh, I hope that my team can finish in the first half of the division this year. Maybe we'll be Oh, I don't know. If we can be within 15 games of the Yankees at the end of the year, I will count that as a winning season and a success. We are a first division
shot in the NL.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I 100%, you know, agree with you on that. I think it was needed because we needed to see two of the best four teams play in the World Series. And I think this was probably the two best teams. They were the two best teams heading into the season.
And the biggest stars.
Yeah. And it had the biggest stars as well. But, you know, I think if it's Philly or, you know, one of those teams upsets the Dodgers or the Padres, I do think that they'll bring some excitement to the World Series as well. You know, on the AL side, you know, I don't know if there's necessarily a team that's going to bring the ratings the way that the Yankees are going to bring the ratings, frankly, because I don't think the Red Sox are there yet. Certainly not.
Give them.
I don't think we're going to see it in 25. I mean,
no, not maybe in 25. But I will see, say,
like, Roman Anthony and Christian Campbell transform into, you know, 70s right off the bat. And then all of a sudden,
say that next year for the Red Sox is the year that they show that they've gone from a foundation to, like, now they're in the playoff hunt. Maybe they make it in and quick exit or whatever. I would say that it's not crazy to think that, especially if they spend some money, which they should, because they haven't been doing a lot of that. And yes, we will just throw in, you know, why would a team ever trade away an Inner Circle Hall of Famer? Oh yeah, that's what they did in Mookie Betts.
And it was funny because one of the main pieces was playing against him in this series too. I kept thinking about that as I was watching that game, you know? I think, you know, that's a big part of it. And then the other part is, like, I look at the AL and I'm like, I don't know if the Orioles would bring in those sort of ratings, right?
No. They will not.
I just don't think they would. They would.
They will not.
I don't think Detroit would bring in those sort of ratings. We know Cleveland wouldn't bring in those sort of ratings. I think on the AL side, for MLB, they probably want the Yankees to be back in this spot.
There is no other. No, there is. Red Sox are the one. The Red Sox.
Yeah.
Those are the two in the AL that can, like, but again, but to
Houston
me,
bring some ratings, but not like that.
No, we've seen that. Like, to me, the thing that stands out with all of this is baseball's in a good spot in that you got a Dodgers Yankees World Series, but this is the first Dodgers Yankees World Series in many of the people watching that never lifetime. Happened in their lifetime.
I'm 42 years old. The last one was the year before I was born. So it was like five months before I was born.
And I'm old enough.
And I have three kids and I have gray hairs.
So, yeah. So, like, it's not happening every year. And by the way, we do have the stat, like, I mean, if you look, the Angels and the Pirates are pretty much the only two teams who haven't made it in the last, 9 years, who haven't made the playoffs. Like, this was a great year for that. Like, as much as we had Dodgers, Yankees, we also had Royals and Tigers and Guardians being good. And the Guardians have been good for a while, but the Royals were good again. Tigers are good for the first time, you know, in a while. We've seen the Brewers are good. Like, we've seen that, you know, you can be good, but again.
Some really competitive divisions too. I think, you know, you look at the AL Central, everyone kind of knocked it coming into the year. It was way more competitive than people had imagined it would be. You know, the AL East was super competitive as well. You know, I know the Rays kind of cashed out at the deadline, but still they weren't that far off from the playoffs in the big scheme of things. I think that I'm a bigger playoff guy. I enjoy more playoff games. I enjoy the early wild card rounds. I know that I'm kind of in the minority there. I think it brings up the bottom up a little bit more in terms of more teams are in the mix and are competitive and are making moves and doing things around the trade deadline. I think it leads to a better storyline in the league, frankly. But I know that I'm in the minority on that. And some people don't like the quality of some of those wild card games. I like more playoff baseball. I'm going to be sort of, you know, staring out the window waiting until springtime at this point. No, I got nothing.
No, you're not. What you're going to do?
NBA games and then football is one day a week, pretty much.
No, you're not. What you're going to do is you're going to type SYN and you're going to type Synergy into your computer, and you're going to fire up Synergy. And like me, you're going to be watching a whole lot of plays from the 2024 season. In addition,
I've been
to
doing
the
that already.
Yeah,
I've been doing that during the World Series. I've been doing that. I think by like mid November, Thanksgiving time, I'm going to be so sick of Synergy.
You know, but yes, that's what we do in the off season is we keep looking at the stuff from the season. By the way, you don't want to even see how deep I went on. It's a story that'll still come, but the play at the plate with Giancarlo Stanton, let's just say maybe I've started looking. I've already looked at every play that the Dodgers made worth a throw home from left field this year, but maybe I'll do that for multiple years. But you know, that's what we do in the off season. But we do need to wrap this up. That was fun. We wanted to put a bow. Congratulations again to the Dodgers and to the Yankees again. Making the World Series is something impressive, even if you didn't win it. But winning it, that's the goal. That's what they play the games for. It's not for anything other than to win the game. You play to win the game. The Dodgers have done that again. And that, again, that does mean a lot when you talk about this team that has been the gold standard as far as how they're run, as far as their willingness to spend, because again, that's something that not everyone does, their success with that, but also drafting, player development, international signing. There is not an aspect of the game that the Dodgers don't want to be the best at.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of teams. I know they have more resources than most, but there is something where they are operating and saying they're operating in a way that the Yankees used to operate, is the best way I can put it. Where it's like, hey, we are the Goliath of this sport, and you're going to have to work really hard to challenge us the way the Yankees did in the 30s, 40s, 50s. That's where the Dodgers are right now. You're not going to win it as much now. It's not the World Series where you're like, hey, if you win you got to win a best of seven after the regular season. But excuse me, but it is something that we do see, you know, the Dodgers are doing that. For Jeff, I'm JJ. We got to go to a top 10 prospects meeting right now. So for Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.